participants. 10. Begin.
All right. Welcome, and thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Jerry Porter, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Jerry is Chief R&D and Innovation Officer, Fabric and Home Care, Flavor and Fragrance at the Procter & Gamble Company. Welcome. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you. I'm looking forward to being here today with you.
So this interview is an element of IRI's new sustainability community, and the sustainability community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. And as the community grows, you'll be able to access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. These are normally on the fourth Thursday of every month. This month is a little strange because we've got our annual conference that week, so it's actually going to be tomorrow. We also do case studies with white papers and industry examples, and we've got one coming out in a matter of days. I'm just going through all the stuff with the designers right now on Nestle Purina Pet Care's sustainable packaging initiatives. We do updates and insights with additional resources, and then interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these almost always take place on the fourth Thursday of the month at 12 o'clock Eastern. And next month, we'll be back on that pattern, and we'll be talking to Anantha Desikan from ICL. And I'll be sure to sign everyone up for updates. And if you don't want them, just let me know. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we begin the conversation. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there will not be any visuals here today. And second, please hold all questions until the end. And you can either put your questions into the chat or you can come off mute and have a conversation, you know, face to face, if you will, with Jerry. All right. All of the boring stuff is out of the way.
Awesome.
So first, we've done all the stuff we have to do. So Jerry, since 2020, you've been the Chief R&D and Innovation Officer for Fabric and Home Care and Flavor and Fragrance. So all the thing, it seems like, at Procter & Gamble. Can you tell us a bit about your background and more about that role?
Sure, definitely. Well, first and foremost, I'm a chemical engineer by training. I've worked both in the U.S. and in Germany, but also in Japan. So I've had global experiences. The beauty about P&G is you get to also experience different business situations. And so I've been across several of the company's big businesses. So I've been in beauty care, hair care, paper, also their prestige business as well. And home care and then fabric care most recently, where this is probably my third stint back into sort of the fabric and home care space. Now, really, since 2020, what I've really been doing is really leading the innovation strategy and application for P&G Global Fabric Care, which is the company's single largest category that includes, as most know, many of P&G's iconic big brands like Tide, Ariel, Downy, and Gain across the globe. I also really serve on several boards and leadership positions, responsible for that innovation strategy for really the entire sector. And so really, what are the key things that we need to focus on for the near, medium, and long term, places that we want to make bets to really ensure that we continue to delight the consumers and continue to grow our business and really drive against the strategies that we've called out. Now, this is big, right? This combined, this is $28 billion business that really makes up 34% of P&G's net sales. And I also, on top of that, for the extra time, am the executive leadership for Flavors and Fragrances, which once again cuts across many of our OUs and business categories. So a breadth of responsibilities, but really all focused on how do we really drive innovation as the center of how we delight our consumers and really accelerate our business. And so as such, you know, the key power, the key piece that really makes it all work is our people. And so really, I am a really strong believer and an advocate for our equality and inclusion strategy, and really see this as a real strength for us. Really, the diversity of thought, having an employee base of innovators that really look like and understand the consumers that we're trying to serve is really critical for us. And on top of that, ensuring that we have really the most inclusive, company and environment that really fosters innovations is a key to make sure that all of the ideas come to the table that we can then make the right choices with the best information and with the right insights to really fuel our business. And so for me, it's a priority as well to really make things work. Now, externally, I also enjoy and a part of a few boards as well. So I'm chair and board member for the Live Well Collaborative with the University of Cincinnati. I'm also a board member for the Executive Leadership Council, also a board member for the National Action Council for Minorities in Engineering, really focused on how do we get more minorities into the STEM fields, computer science, engineering, across the board, for across the whole company, and sit on that with many of the other big multinationals. And then also on a trade association board, Household and Commercial Products Association, to really help influence and impact some of those critical issues and things that we need to work as an industry. So a full plate, as many of my colleagues and peers will have, to really sort of, you know, try and make a difference day in and day out.
It sounds like it, huh? Okay, so let's dive straight into the sustainability stuff. So where does it actually sit at P&G?
Well, listen, I mean, at P&G, sustainability is really is not a separate objective. It's really built into our business strategy. It's how we do business. And really, we're stepping up, as you've heard us say a lot of times, not only a force for growth, but a force for good, really looking at how we improve the lives of our consumers, but also impacting the lives of our employees for generations to come. So that really is baked in at the core of what we're trying to do. Now, sustainability in and of itself, I truly view it as it's an innovation, a challenge for us. Now, you know, our ambition 2030 really supports our brand visions, our ability to provide, as we talk about, irresistible, superior products that are sustainable. And so as we think about then innovation from that, we think about how do we innovate to drive irresistible, superior solutions that are also sustainable, that then allow us to make progress. Because at the end of the day, for us, our end user, the consumer, does not want to take any trade-offs. They've got a job to do for why they hire our products and why they want to partner with our brands day in and day out. And we need to make that as frictionless as possible and still enable them to drive the delight. And so at the core of all of this that really makes it happen is it's built on our really strong foundation and belief, science-based belief. And that really really drives us. And so as we think about sustainability for us, it's really across three core pillars: climate, waste, water, and nature. And these are the places where we believe we can make the biggest difference for the planet and our business. And really at the foundation, it's really about improving not only the livelihoods of the people across the operations, the supply chain, and the communities that we serve in every day. And so if I really want to hit each of those just a little bit, just to give a flavor for everybody on how we think about it. As we think about climate, we're talking about accelerating our action on climate change to really, really make progress to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions across our operations, our supply chain by 2040. Our climate transition action plan really includes both short-term 2030 goals, which we're on a great pace to deliver, and great progress, including reducing emissions across our operations by 50% and across our supply chain by 40%. Now, as an example, in fabric care, we've really been leading the way for the company through our journey to decarbonize laundry whilst also delighting consumers with irresistible superior examples or products. And so this has been sort of a lighthouse example for us. Now, if I really turn to waste, what we're thinking there is we're really talking about accelerating sustainable packaging, recycling, and waste management solutions. So holistic, you know, we try to look at the problem from a holistic standpoint. And really at the core of doing that for us, once again, since we're science-based, is really making an assessment across all of these vectors, leveraging life cycle analysis as really the key input to say, are we making progress or not, versus just a claim on one vector or not. Now, as we do this waste management solutions, we're really trying to provide those products that really delight, while helping, you know, keep waste out of the nature. And so specifically, the company has targets around virgin plastic reduction by 50% by 2030. We're on great track for that, and full recyclability by 2030. And in fabric care, especially in the US, we're already progressing toward more than 99% recyclability by the end of this calendar year. So once again, you know, we continue to make, you know, meaningful progress in that that key piece. The final one, water, which is one that we're really just starting to tackle and really starting to build our plans against even more. We really want to help to build a water positive future that really that could sustain people and nature now and for generations to come. So what are we doing? We're responding to water challenges through innovation and partnerships, looking at, you know, how do we provide solutions and products that allow the consumer to reduce water as they use our products. We're also reducing water in our operations to help conserve local water supplies, making progress toward our goal to increase water efficiency at facilities by 35% per unit of production by 2030. So those are all things that were within our control. We're also doing recycling and sourcing 5 billion liters of water from circular sources every year by 2030. And we're also consistently looking at how we restore water in water-stressed areas for people and nature as part of that. And then nature, we really continue to really focus on keeping the forest as forests and for now and in the future. And so although we don't own any forest or manage any commercial forest, it does play a key role in many of our products. And so we're committed to zero deforestation in our supply chain. So for every tree we use, at least one is regrown. And so so that's part of our program as well. And we're also looking to help protect and restore nature through regenerative projects that touch almost 35 countries around the world. So that just sort of gives you a few nuggets on how we're thinking about it, how it's embedded in our strategy. You know, we want to really look to be a leader on really driving science-based solutions on this and those that really matter for our consumers and that make really tangible, measurable progress.
That's great. Okay, so you've got all of these great and amazing goals. How are you cascading that through the organization and bringing it down to where it's practical?
Yeah, I mean, that is the challenge because, you know, the thing that I would say, our organization and the folks that we're hiring today, they are demanding that the companies really provide perspective to them on how are you going to make progress. New employees don't want to work for companies that are not making progress. So if we're going to want to really attract the best talent, we've got to do that. Secondly, even within the organization, you know, there's such an understanding for everyone here about the challenges ahead that there's a yearning to really understand and for news on, hey, everything we're doing, you know, how are we making progress against these big challenges? So really across P&G and the R&D organization, the reaction has been very positive to the strategies that we've laid out and the examples. I definitely use many of my town halls, my visits to each of the tech centers to always showcase some of the progress because, you know, sitting in one region, one country, you don't always see the big picture of everything that we're trying to do. And so we try to bring that to life day in and day out to sort of showcase how the work that they're doing day in is contributing to us making the progress on a bigger stage. So sustainability as a strategy is embedded into our innovation strategy. It's embedded into, as we talk about, our business strategy and everything we do. And we really encourage our employees to really embed that into their everyday work. And really, to the extent that we now, for instance, specifically to fabric care, we've created models where folks can actually start to define formulations that make progress against sustainability. That's a criteria now that they use. And so their choices of materials and ingredients, we are starting to sort of use those to sort of say, hey, across the board, how do we want to make that? And we've got, you know, once again, to sort of bring it to life for the day-to-day folks, we've created, you know, waterfall charts to sort of show where are we making progress, where are the big components, and then how is our innovation, our strategy sort of lining up to get to our goals. And so that makes it real for the organization, and we can also start to track our progress. And P&G, if we can track it and measure it and hold each other accountable, we usually make good progress against those goals.
Mm. So you mentioned, you know, embedding it into what staff are doing. So how are you helping staff to upskill to understand these different challenges?
Well, yeah, listen, I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, we need to make sure that we have a learning culture and a growth mindset for the organization. Our expectation is we really want all of our employees to constantly be looking for how they upskill themselves on sort of the latest capabilities to not only be relevant, but to make sure that we innovate at the highest level. And so it's no different on sustainability as well. And so we are asking the organization to upskill by building capabilities in this area across all levels and functions, leveraging both internal and external experts to do that, as well as tailoring some in-depth based models and training on their business cases and business needs. As part of that, we've just launched a corporate self-assessment tool along with some comprehensive capability platform with a sustainability academy for self-learning. And so this will include sort of definition of the basics and also sort of advanced modules across all sustainability relevant themes so that everyone can be educated on that progress. And then we've also established a dedicated program to really award employees who make significant contributions. So also rewarding the work and the innovation. And so so that folks can see, especially from an R&D standpoint, if their peers are getting recognized for amazing work and making differences in that area against our ambition 2030 goals. We are also, you know, as any big corporation, we're also linking it to pay. So, you know, for our senior executives, we're linking it the ESG progress. So P&G's board has modified our annual incentive program to include an ESG factor to be applied to bonus payouts for most of our senior executives. So once again, it makes it real, right? At the end of the day, that you got to make is not just talk. You got to make progress on this. And this ESG factor will be determined based on the fiscal year progress towards several of our long-term E&I and sustainability goals as outlined on this from our citizenship report. So once again, we're doing the training, we're showcasing, rewarding through awards and highlighting great work, and we're linking it to pay for our senior executives so that the strategies that we call out are baked into each business unit's activities. So that's how we're trying to move such a big ship to make real meaningful progress in this area.
Okay. All right. So shifting gears slightly. So you talked about how your goal is to ensure there isn't a trade-off between value, performance, and sustainability. And, you know, somebody who uses Tide, thank you. How are you working within innovation to meet that challenge? And can you give us an example?
Sure. I'll give you some examples. I mean, first, it's a all hands on deck sport that we're all working against, our brands, our innovation, our commercial and marketing folks. And so we're really working together to really create and share products, tools, and information to really help our consumers to reduce their footprint at home, because we've got to educate as well on how best to use the products to really see that. And even, you know, as we do that, even small actions at home can make a world of difference for our planet. And so just getting folks to sort of turn to cold has a huge, huge impact. Now, you can't just turn to cold without actually delivering the promise. And the promise is we want to actually clean better in cold than you're cleaning in hot. And so that then becomes the innovation challenge that we then pull together work again. So we made great progress on that because we know at the end of the day, to really get long lasting progress on sustainability, the consumer can't see or experience any trade-offs. Otherwise, either there'll be other habits that they go in. They'll either have to go and use more additives. They'll rewash things again if there's failures. They'll fire the product that they had failure with. So it's a high bar when you start to make these. But if you set those big stretching goals from an innovation culture standpoint, and you can actually deliver superior performance even in cold versus the hot, then consumers will be delighted. And oh, by the way, you're making progress on this big goal. And so this gives us the opportunity then to really set some really stretching goals for our scientists to really go after, to say, hey, we really want both, right? We want you to delight the consumer, but even in these more stressed conditions that are good for the environment. And when we do that, we've definitely had examples where we've not only been able to shift the consumer habit, but we're making a good progress. The one example, I'll give you two quick ones, I think, just to sort of bring it to life for you. One, hopefully you've experienced and you're seeing, but, you know, it's on Tide North America, right? One of our biggest flagship brand. And really with great partnership with our Tide scientists, we've developed catalytic chemistry that's mass efficient and sustainable that works even in cold water conditions to deliver that superior performance and delight for the consumer. Our life cycle assessment of laundry detergent shows that really the use phase, reheating that water, is the most contributing driver for our relevant environmental indicators. So if we can really make progress there, we can really, you know, make an impact on reducing carbon emissions, really due to the energy required to heat the water. And followed by sort of bringing these ingredient production and sourcing as well, we can really shift this. And so the technology is very effective for large loads, heavy duty stains, for that deeper level of cleaning. And so, you know, it's in Tide Pods, you know, sort of hygienic clean. And, you know, by doing that, you actually can get consumers to sort of, you know, turn to the closed cycles and get fantastic, exciting results. And not only then are they making progress with sustainability, they could save about $150 per year in cost on the energy piece. So benefit, great cleaning, get your clothes clean in the time you want to get them clean, you save money and you're making progress. So in that piece, you can carry the consumer along and you can drive adoption of the habit. Second example is in the, say, on Cascade. And really the question there is, how can we offer a consumer a dishwashing detergent, providing superior cleaning, but in quick cycles and using less water, right? So once again, payout for the consumer is they have to have no failures when they're doing this. It's going to save time and it's going to save water. And by doing this, we'll also get the consumer actually to actually use the dishwasher a little bit more. And the key reason why that's important, you know, you actually, you know, use a lot more water when you just turn on the tap hand washing than you do turning on the dishwashing machine. And so if we can get consumers actually to actually use the dishwasher more or these quick cycles, we can save a lot of water as well as energy as well. And so if you really just think about just spending 10 minutes per day hand washing your dishes, then choosing your dishwasher for your daily load of dishes, skipping the pre-rinse, you can save up to 100 gallons of water per week. Which is creating great value both in time saving for the consumer and also on the heating bill. So, but this is all anchored by you got to have a phenomenally superior product that could work even under these stressed conditions where it's reduced time, heavy soil load, or colder temperature. If you don't have that foundation, then once again, the consumer is not going to actually adapt the habit. You're not going to make the real progress that you want to make. Now, you know, we're communicating this on a brand standpoint. So effectively, as we've done this on Cascade, I think, you know, we've been able to save up to 25 plus billion gallons of water saved just in U.S. homes since the campaign launched in 2020. So once again, we're making real meaningful impact, big numbers in trying to shift these consumer habits.
There's a lot to take in here. First, I'm just thinking about my son's disgusting rugby kit and will it be able to go in cold? I don't know.
Yep, it's a high bar. It's a high bar. You know, we got
to test this one. I haven't been brave enough to try it yet. I'm going to try it after his next practice and I'll let you know.
All right. Please do.
So this is an example. How has it impacted your relationship with consumers then? Are you out there talking to all the soccer moms like myself?
All the time. I mean, you know, the consumer is really the center of our innovation cycle and what we do. We listen to them every day. We take their insights, their habits, what they're doing at home to really help us formulate that and really get to the really-reallys on what they're getting. And that's really where we start to see these unique insights and understanding of where innovation can really play a real big role.
Hey, Chetan.
I'll take care of that. There we go.
Okay, thank you. So we recently conducted some research in the U.S. that taught us that, you know, 90% of people we interviewed want to live more sustainably, but only 11% consistently do. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge gap there. And why is that? Because they find it hard. And as I mentioned early on, we've got to reduce the friction to be more sustainable. That means better products, easy to understand, easy to use, and sort of fit within their current habit. Consumers are not going to jump through hoops to sort of necessarily, to sort of drive sustainability. There are a few really hardened folks that'll do a lot of things to try and stay, and to the extent that they're willing to give up on performance, but that's not the bulk of the consumers today. So we got to reduce that friction through innovation and in our communication. So we have to stay very, very close to them. Most consumers are aware of climate changes. They are expecting brands and companies to do their part, but also, you know, they don't want, as I continue to say, to not have their clothes clean, to have that failure, to have their son's soccer cleats and everything else, our shoes, socks, which I had a soccer son as well. They are tough. They are tough things to clean. And so, it's a very, very high bar. And so but that's where we want to make progress. And that's where we put our best scientists against in partnership with many of our suppliers to help us do that. And when we do it right, we can save energy. we can, you know, make progress on water and waste and really deliver exceptional performance and delight for the consumer. And so, you know, we just launched a campaign in the U.S. called Made Better, Made to Save. In essence, you know, thanks to the innovation, we're on a mission really to leverage that innovation so that P&G products can really make that make it easy to make progress on energy, water, and plastic reduction.
All right. So moving to kind of the other side, you know, upstream. So what about partners, suppliers? How are you working with them to accomplish these goals? I imagine P&G has some significant leverage.
Listen, we have great partners and we're constantly looking for who really wants to partner with this day in and day out for these solutions. And the sustainability piece has opened up another whole opportunity for new and unique collaborations across the whole value chain, especially as there's so many new emerging technologies. We're going to need so many new emerging technologies, everything from carbon capture to actually, you know, new feedstocks that have a significantly different greenhouse footprint. And so we're trying to partner across that whole ecosystem. But with our core main ones, we're trying to do this together. And we need to make progress together because this is going to be the currency in the future. I expect, you know, the metrics around sustainability to be as ubiquitous as, you know, concentrations and molecular weights and things like that on formula cards and MSDS sheets. You know, it's going to be part of the choice that folks decide what to buy, what to use, and what not to use in the future. So we have strong partnerships already in place with a lot of our big suppliers. We're working with many, many stakeholders on this challenge, everything from academia to looking at new solutions there, startups, NGOs to understand their understanding on this, packaging, chemical suppliers, organizations like NASA. You know, we're in another more constrained environment than space, right? You know, water, very little, you know, you got to recycle everything. So we're learning in that context as well with NASA and bringing some of that knowledge back on, hey, if we can learn on addressing some of the issues there around doing laundry in a very, very extreme resource constrained environment, that knowledge brought back to how we can do things here on Earth can really be an accelerator for us. And so we've also established a P&G Accelerator, Powerhouse Accelerator, our innovation center in Brussels, to really connect more strongly and effectively with startups, corporates, and research partners. And we're also looking more out of the box technologies that are sustainable and really, you know, as a core for us, not only are they sustainable, but allows us to deliver irresistible superiority or performance in a different vector. And really allows us really to comply with all the emerging safety and regulatory criteria that is also popping up. So from an innovator standpoint, you know, you could look at this as, wow, there's a lot of threats out there. I tend to look at it as there's a lot of opportunity for innovation. We just need to navigate it and make the right choices. So really looking at greenhouse gas emissions profiles related to our P&G fabric and home care business, products and needs, they really fall into the scope 3 emissions. And so as part of this, we see partnership with our suppliers as a critical element for us to make progress, especially in two areas. One, we've got to significantly lower the CO2 footprint of our existing materials. And so we need to do that with our big core suppliers, and they've got to invest and think about the new technologies to do that. Secondly, we've got to develop really more high performing and carbon efficient ingredients that work in cold and in low water conditions. And so once again, we need to look for new solutions, new approaches that in some instances need to have 10x performance in certain areas. Now, in each country, we need to have a regulatory environment and process that allows us to bring these new to the world technologies into the marketplace fast enough. And so that's a journey in advocacy and work as well. That's why I sit on some of the trade association boards, and we have others sitting on some of the others, because we've also got to impact that system as well to be able to bring the new technologies in that are going to allow us to make progress on that. And that's no small feat. It's one that many of my peers and other companies were struggling with, as it's not as straightforward as it should be. But as we do this, we truly believe that, you know, there's lots of opportunities for us to really make meaningful progress through that. And you know, with our partners, and suppliers, we've launched the Cleaner and Better Together program last year, really engaging our top suppliers into our sustainability efforts, really to sort of create sort of joint opportunities for us to build capability, set our expectations of what we're looking for, and our view, our perspective on how we think about this challenge. And part of this, we just really hosted an ESG summit at our Innovation Center in Brussels. I think we had over 370 participants, where we brought together key suppliers, startups, SMEs, and external stakeholders, looking across the total value supply, the value chain, including packaging suppliers. Phenomenal session, but we were trying to make those connections to help us sort of make progress at each step. So some of the SMEs and startups we brought really were doing some very innovative and creative things on how do you create more sustainable feedstocks that then could feed into our core suppliers that then at the end of the chain would deliver superior performing solutions that had a better greenhouse footprint. So that's how we're approaching it. Some of the big programs that we're working, it clearly is a marathon, not a short race. We got to make incremental progress day in and day out with our partners. And we want to do this in a way that creates joint value for us and for them as well.
So you mentioned it's a marathon, not a sprint, but ROI is always hard to calculate on this stuff. So how does that calculus work at P&G?
Well, listen, by us really demanding that it's superior and sustainable, and then that ensures that we have an opportunity to create value as we think about our initiatives. Perfect example is what we're doing on cold water and the Ariel EcoClick that you see in Europe, where we have a better performing product that works in cold. We're able to commercialize it around washing cold. It is in a carton box. It makes progress. It's easy to open, so it's more accessible. So it has a lot of things. It says it's just better. And so that we can create value across the board. And so those are more of the solutions that we need that are holistic in context, that really solve a consumer pain point for us, and that are superior. Then we find ways to do that. We talked about Tide, how, you know, sort of the superior catalytic chemistry that we're bringing forward there is going to help. We have new group of surfactants that are coming in. So across the chain, we're able to create it, but focusing on those areas that if we can make a big improvement in performance one, we then know how to, you know, build a solution around that would allow us to delight the consumer and make progress across that. Everything from removing stains, malodor, you name it. There's lots of opportunities that we can go after that, you know, for our consumer goods piece. We make meaningful progress against sort of the key drivers of the jobs to be done for the consumer that then would allow us to create value. And if we can drive more category growth and with our propositions, then that also means there's more volume and materials and supply for our suppliers as well, with more sustainable materials. And those typically will replace the more incumbent materials that may be less efficient and have a poorer footprint.
Okay, and you mentioned this earlier, but I want to take a deep dive in it. You're global. How are you dealing with the shifting regulatory landscape? It's tricky. We get a lot of the questions.
It's tricky. It's scary. It's amorphous. You don't know where you're going to get hit. So you just really got to get into the game and start to influence where you can and start to innovate out of some of the solutions. But at the core of it, from a Procter & Gamble standpoint, truly, we're committed to operate at the most highest ethical and business standards. And so our policy is we're going to comply to the letter and the spirit of the law wherever we do that business. This also applies then to sustainability as well. We're going to be science-led. And so, yeah, we're going to have conversations and advocacy to actually help shape regulations and impact those to that make sense. That at the core, if it's around sustainability, leverage LCA as really a good measurement of, in the end, are we making progress versus just one vector or the other? And so it's going to be critical that we have the right partnerships, the right relationships to manage this. We have to have the right capability to assess what are some of the emerging regs and changes coming. At times, we may need to go and create really the science and the data to understand a certain area to come back and have the right conversations on this. So you're right. It's an emerging area. It's, you know, it's going to be a headwind against a lot of pieces, but one that is just a new reality. What I would say is, you know, given the consumers really wanting to make progress, or regulators are really active in wanting to sort of regulate that. And so all three of us and industry, we need to get together to figure out really the third way that makes sense to say make progress on these things, but in a science-based way that allows us to continue to innovate out of this. So that's the challenge for us in the future.
So, and this is my last question. So if you guys want to start getting your questions into the chat, go for it. But just looking to the future, how do you want things to go from here?
Well, listen, as I mentioned a couple of times and just reiterate it for us, we want to be driven by our consumers and by the science. And so at the heart, at least, you know, the way I operate with my organization and with the sector here is I'm an optimist that for the most part, if we can a problem well defined is already half solved. And so as we get real clarity on the definition of what that solution is, you know, we should be able to innovate and find solutions to sort of get most of the way there. And so I have huge confidence both in our P&G scientists, the partners that we have the best partners in the world, some of the world's biggest companies that we work with that have a powerhouse of innovation as well that we work with, that really, you know, time and time again, given enough time and with the right targets, have been able to make the impossible possible in lots and lots of situations that we just didn't think were possible. So having said that, we've got some ambitious goals, really, and we need to really collaborate with these partners, look for the new solutions, create new solutions with academics and startups to really allow us to make progress across that whole supply chain, you know, so that we can really hit our objectives. So I think we're going to do it. You know, the question will be, like I said, we got timing to go and do that. We got, you know, these dates are getting close, but we're making really, really good progress. And we're going to continue to make this journey on sustainability. It's embedded in what we do. We believe in it. We're stepping out to really live the promise that we've made to be, you know, both a force for growth and a force for good by really, you know, reducing our footprint in every way possible across our business and really developing delightful, irresistible, superior solutions that the consumer can't resist, that grow categories, that then those things will allow us to really make meaningful progress and actually get the consumer to adopt more sustainable habits and products in the future. So, it's an exciting time as an innovator. It can be a stressful time, but I'm confident that, you know, at least from a P&G standpoint, you know, we'll make meaningful, significant progress against our goals.
Wonderful. Fantastic. All right. So the questions are starting to come in. And surprise, surprise. And if anyone wants to do the, you know, asking the question face-to-face, just raise your hand. That's the easiest way. Sorry, I should have mentioned that earlier. So the first question is, one of the big future challenges will be reuse. How do you see these this being implemented in the FMCG space?
Clearly, you know, we're investigating water reuse, you know, as a vector of making, especially as you start to figure out how you need to innovate and solve solutions in really low water and water hit areas. And so reuse is going to really be a critical innovation vector that we have to go. So not only reducing your water use, but then how do you repurpose that in a meaningful way? And so it is part of our stream of innovation to think about that. Across the board. Also on some of our, depending on which platform we're looking at, you know, we're looking at how do we repurpose materials, starting materials from other places to be the starting materials for our consumer goods. And so we have examples across that in home care where we're starting programs there. Even across other businesses, we're looking at how we, you know, recycle, reuse, you know, take sort of diapers and then turn those back into meaningful feedstock for products as well. So we look for opportunities across the total board. Clearly, PCR into our packaging that we've already committed to 50. We're driving that very, very hard, and we'll look for other opportunities. We're also looking at cellulosic packaging. So we're going to be running an experiment in Europe with LFE on that, a compressed cellulose bag, with also a compressed cellulosic cap. And so, you know, to make sure that we have a good seal, we've got Gen 1, Gen 2 there. So, you know, we're continuing to make progress in learning in a lot of different vectors to make progress on this.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. And the next one is, I'm going to start rolling through these. So what percentage more do you see as the consumer's willingness to pay more for a sustainable solution when there's no performance benefit? And how does that compare to P&G's willingness to pay more for their ingredient sourcing to meet your goals?
Listen, our experience today in most cases, unless it's just really the eco-savvy consumer, which is about 15% in some of the markets, the bulk of our consumers are not willing to pay more just for sustainability in and of itself today. When you wrap that up with a better idea on better performance and cold and other elements, then yes, you can create more pricing power and more opportunity to premiumize to pay for that new technology that is going to typically cost more. Secondly, as we said in our ESG conversations when we had everybody together, from a P&G standpoint, we're not interested in just having materials and things coming in that just cost more with no benefit. There's nothing in that for the consumer. And so it's not a place that we're going to go. So in those situations, we'll formulate those things out. So, you know, as we've told several suppliers, it's, you know, partner with us. We'll try to find vectors where we can drive that both better and more sustainable. Let's have the conversation on how we can create value. We're not interested in the conversation of more sustainable and cost more.
Okay. All right. So the next one's interesting. I haven't gotten this question before. So outside of P&G itself and its vendors, what kind of environmental causes or types of nonprofits, if any, is P&G supporting?
Listen, I don't know all of them, that's interesting, but we definitely have for years done Safe Water, where we actually, through some of our unique technology, have been donating to create water for, you know, billions of liters of fresh water in Africa and across the globe. So that's one program that we've been in for almost a decade or more. There are programs that we're doing, with the consumers to help them. With women on, not only incontinence, but fem care products, so that the girls can stay in school. So there's lots of different vectors that the company pushes on. We also do Tide Loads of Hope. So when there's these tragedies, fires, hurricanes, what have you, we come in with a low wash water solution to actually provide opportunities for those consumers that are really working through some tragedy to sort of be able to get, you know, clean laundry and what have you. So there's different vectors, different things that the companies, I don't have the full list, but there are quite a few vectors that the P&G as a company will push on and support.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. And this one's from Alexa Dembeck at DuPont. And Alexa, if you want to do follow-ups, just jump in. So do you have a portfolio assessment tool to evaluate percent of sustainable product sales or innovation pipeline?
Yeah, I mean, we have a tool that we look at that one. Well, first, from an R&D standpoint, I have a tool that looks at my front of innovation portfolio. It sort of makes an assessment of the percentage of that front of innovation that has sustainability at its core or an element of that. We're probably about 60-70% of my FEI portfolio that has that built in today, as sort of the, that we can truly link to that piece, and it's going to continue to move up as we've sort of declared that we're building it in. From a business standpoint, tracking, we don't have anything today, I don't believe, that sort of looks at it from a NOS standpoint. What we're really trying to track is progress against the goals that we've sort of put out there across that piece. Now, what the company is working in a broader construct, and many are with a lot of consultants, is how are you going to track and measure the ESG goals that the SEC is going to be requiring for each of us? And so that's happening from our regulatory and GPS system. And so that's going to be probably the one reporting piece that we would report external for that SEC requirement on ESG progress.
Super. Thanks, Jerry.
All right. So this one's a little different. So this one, some studies suggest that the major source of microplastics in the environment is from textiles through washing. And as a manufacturer of detergents, are you all working on this? What steps are you doing to address it?
Sure. So listen, we one of our scientists lead scientists in Newcastle. We had put together some work and study to understand sort of where some of the microplastics could be coming. And one of the pieces and benefits that we found, and we actually published this paper, is that actually washing in cold reduces the amount of microfiber breakage that actually comes from garments. So we don't talk about it, but you know, there's also an element here of as we can shift consumers to washing more in cold, we can also reduce some of the microplastics that do come through that. Now, you know, if you've got a good screen in the washing machine, then you should be able to screen a lot of the microplastic. But yeah, you're right. A lot of it still, the big chunk still comes through that from the garment standpoint.
Okay. So I really do need to start washing in cold.
There's a lot of benefits. Garments last a little bit longer. If, like I said, with the right products and you can get them clean, it works fantastic.
I need to do it. I say I'm eco-friendly, and then what am I doing? I hit that warm.
It's easy. It's always, yeah, exactly. It's easy just from a consumer standpoint to stay on, just hit normal, you know, versus actively changing it. But that'll be an opportunity for us in the future as well, as the machine industry has to think about, well, what is the standard for normal? All right. Is it going to stay where it is, or is it going to shift over time?
Yeah, it automatically comes on with warmth.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
All right. And I think we'll make this our last question so we can give Jerry a rest from the rapid fire round. So this one's from Chuck Hardy at Michaelman, so a neighbor. He's in Cincinnati too. So I see P&G's goals are communicated in terms of per unit of production. Has technology allowed that unit of production to change over time and thus improve the metric in a different way?
Wow. Michael, I don't know how to answer that one per se. Like I said, I think that's how we're
Jerry Michael's about. My dad. Come on.
Oh, man. Sorry, you're right. I'm sorry, man.
Everybody knows everybody in Cincinnati.
I know. Well, I just went straight there. But listen, I think clearly as we do our work from an innovation standpoint, we're talking about grams of CO2 reduction for the material that we're using, and that's how we're designing that piece. I think as we try to roll it up for the company, we're trying to find a common unit that works across all of our 11 business units. And so I think that's when we try to roll it up into that unit production piece to be consistent with how we have to report externally for the company. But as I do my day-to-day work, we typically are looking at what is the gram of CO2, the progress that we're making on the actual material that we start to put into the formulation. So does it fully answer your question? But we can get back to you on that one.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jerry. This has been fantastic, both professionally, I've learned a lot, and personally, I'm going to make some changes in my lifestyle. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, sharing so much about P&G's efforts. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all of you who joined and asked questions and put us through our paces. So thanks, everyone, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right. Thank you. All right. Bye.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.